I think we're going to be joined now by also in this conversation by Tony Leah, who is the political action chair, Local 222 of Unifor, Oshawa. Tony, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Phil.
A very important story has been written, Tony. I believe it, you would agree with me. And it's in passage.com, readpassage.com is where I have it. It has a, it's, let me make sure I got the author. It's, we'll get the author's name in a moment. The trucker, he was writing about the truckers, this romantic breed of knights of the highway. And the title is The Trucker Convoy is Not a Workers' Revolt. And it's written by Adam D. K. King. And I like the subtitle, The Trucker Convoy is a, quote, revolt of petty bourgeoisie owner-operators. For those of you who speak French, petty bourgeoisie owner-operators, financially backed by wealthy right-wing grifters, not the vast majority of exploited trucking workers. Tony, you read it. What do you think of this article?
It's a terrific article. I think that there's a great deal of really interesting information and analysis in it, and I would encourage people to read it. And it does pick up on a few of the points that we've been talking about on this show, and in particular, the class nature of these protests. And,
exactly.
And we talked about that. This is not a movement of truck drivers who are workers, who work for trucking companies. And you know that because all you have to do is look at their demands. They're not demanding higher wages, better protections, job security, better health and safety. They're not fighting against wage theft, which is a huge issue for increasingly marginalized truckers in North America. And if they were, they probably wouldn't be getting cheered on by Donald Trump and Elon Musk.
Yes. And well, and the governor of Florida, by the way, I understand some people have signs saying make Canada Florida again or something like that, because the governor of Florida is a psychopath. He now will punish you if you wear a mask to protect yourself. These are not unconnected people, very definitely. An element of it that we talked about last week. There is a driver, the legendary union in North America is the Teamsters. Now there was a time, this article says, there was a time when the over the road, that's the long haul guys, were members of the Teamsters, but something happened in 1980, something called deregulation. What did you make of that argument, Tony?
It's really important. It hasn't been focused on enough. I think the author is absolutely correct, Mr. King, that there was a huge drive by capitalist powers around that time, headed up by Maggie Thatcher in the UK and Ronald Reagan in the United States to attack all the fundamental supports that workers had fought for and achieved over the years. And deregulation was a huge part of that. It particularly affected the transportation industry, airlines and railroads. We saw how rail was absolutely decimated in this country and in the U.S. and, making it much, much harder for workers to travel because there isn't that basic form of transportation available. Airlines, workers were under attack through mm-hmm. deregulation. And it certainly had a huge impact on the trucking industry. And it really undermined the Teamsters to the point where more and more of the industry is non-union, and the parts that are still union have come under attack and are now prey to this cancer of two-tier agreements that we've talked about on this show before as well.
Is something we made an, is something along, analogous to the big argument over Uber, right?
It is. I mean, there's
are they workers or are they contractors, right?
That's right. That's right. And in this article, King does a good job of talking about focusing on this issue of immigrant workers, a lot of them South Asian, who are pressured in order to save a job or get a job because they are very vulnerable workers. They're pressured to sign agreements saying that they are independent contractors, which is a complete lie. And what it does is it allows the companies to not pay into workers' comp and unemployment insurance for these workers. So it disentitles them from benefits. It disentitles them from basic protections like minimum wage and overtime. And they also, it turns out, are really subject to a horrible amount of wage theft, where these companies just don't pay them, and you know, and stonewall them and stiff them, and the authorities that we have in Ontario, other provinces, don't pursue these owners; they don't go after them, and so these workers are really getting super exploited, and these are not the workers who are part of these protests, and the people who are in the protests don't care about those workers who are being exploited. One of the people that has been listed as a leader of this movement, you may have seen him at some of the press conferences, is a guy named Chris Barber. And the reporters were asking about, you know, all of the honking and absolute chaos that the protest in Ottawa has created. And he says, well, you know, I haven't even been to my truck for 5 days. It's just sitting there. And it turns out he's the owner of a trucking company. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a worker. And of course, the other leaders of this movement don't even have anything to do with the trucking industry. They're part of a right-wing movement associated with Western separatists and extreme right-wingers that want to attack workers, you know, unions. They're very anti-union, and they're extremely right-wing, and they are closely tied in with racists and white supremacists and neo-Nazis.
Yeah, that's of course Tony Leah. We're discussing the article in Passage by Adam D. K. King. Again, I'm going to read that title. The trucker convoy is a, quotes, revolt of the petty bourgeoisie owner-operators, financially backed by wealthy right-wing grifters. Not the vast majority of exploited trucking workers. You know, Tony, we've been conscientious. I want people, listeners of Tatum Report, to know we haven't been relying on the mainstream media, which we've gone straight to the, as they used to say, the horse's mouth. And I was watching the press conference, and they kept the cameras rolling so that the press conference of Ms. Leach, who the only identified, or at least so far as I know, the one that they've decided they're going to go with as a spokesperson, very, you probably noticed, Tony, very guarded kind of press conference. But following it, cameras kept rolling. And there was a gentleman who said he was in the trucking business, had some knowledge of it. And I heard him say, this isn't over. We got 400 contractors going to be going to, I think he said Regina, doesn't really matter. His point was 100 contractors, again, for Mr. Galloway and others who have been waxing about this enthusiastically. These are people who, as you just said, actually take advantage of workers. Workers. And in this article, Mr. King, Adam King, says that the investigations of problems in the industry, particularly, I think you said, wage theft, are disproportionately amongst this sector of the trucking business, right?
Yes, I was really struck by that, and I was very glad that he has done that research. And what he showed was that the trucking sector, which is a minority of the federally regulated Canadian economy, accounts for 80% of Canadian labor standards violations. So this small sector is responsible for 80% of the complaints to the federal government from workers who are being exploited. And the vast majority of that is from the smaller companies, companies that have less than 100 employees. He says those companies employ only 13% of federally regulated workers, but 89% of the complaints come from that sector. And that's the sector of these smaller owners, trucking company owners, whose whole business model is based on misclassification and wage theft and exploitation of truckers. And they
and certainly preventing unions
and fighting
no unions yep. need apply.
And they get to stand in front of the media and portray themselves as the truckers. It's a very bitter irony.
I'm a trucker. I own a truck.
Well, that's right.
So I think, by the way, Black Lives Matter and the Indigenous movement and certainly unions should learn from the leadership of these truckers that the next time they have a demonstration, everybody should bring his semi truck.
Mm-hmm.
And if Black Lives Matter would just, we all have one in our driveway. So bring the rig. And that way, you see, we'll get more respect, get more, a little more attention. I don't know how we all missed that. It was right in front of us. Just bring your big rig.
Bring your big rig, yeah.
Which I assume, by the way, I mean, I haven't priced it, but my guess is it's a big figure for a big rig.
I don't know myself, but I'm sure they are hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Your guys make those things. I guess you don't know the price.
I don't know anybody that owns one. I can tell you that.
You're not getting your money back on the sale.
We tend to make smaller trucks. We make smaller trucks than that in Oshawa. Those big rigs are worth a lot. I mean, you have to basically take out a mortgage if you're just an individual that wants to take out your hands on one of them. And then really the bank owns it. And you got to be living in it night and day in order to try to make enough money to make your expenses. And you don't have the resources to go and park it in Ottawa for a week and to disrupt and intimidate and bully people in Ottawa or any other city in Canada.
Yeah, and how many workers' struggles you've been in? Many. How many of them can raise eight million in a week or 3 days? Four.
No, it's of course.
Wouldn't your company be a little unhappy if a millionaire in Florida was giving money to let you walk around a picket line so that you could have hamburgers and somebody pay for your
I can't imagine
hotel?
I can't imagine what GM would say, but it's very striking that Rick DeSantis and the Attorney General of Texas today are both screaming about GoFundMe not handing money over to the truckers because their citizens have contributed so much of that money and should be allowed to fund these protests in Canada.
We do favor American meddling in our affairs.
Of course.
It's very important because we know what to do if they didn't? And it is a Taylor Report, CIUT. I'm going to go right back to that. I want everybody to know, please read this article by Mr. King and Adam King, I believe. I'm going to run up his name here. Adam D.K. King, and because, listen, this is vital stuff. We are talking about what is clearly a right-wing formation out of the West, as they drove, and the people decided to romanticize the whole thing, and frankly confuse many people. I think Phil is still with us, but Tony, I want to ask you, you saw the press conference, and again, we are conscientious here. We listen to them, and we try to get their names right and to say what they're actually saying. Now, in a press conference, Tamara Leach said that she had praise for one premier in Canada, and that was Mr. Moe in Saskatchewan. And she said he's doing the right thing. Now, I read in the Toronto Star of Sunday, the 6th, and there's a scientist, by the way, ironically, her name is Tamara Moriarty, a Toronto infectious disease expert. She has published a peer-reviewed article, a book in a journal, a scientific journal, where she says that Saskatchewan has miscounted and have got their numbers wrong on the number of deaths from COVID. I said peer-reviewed. Now, Premier Mo is unhappy about this and has said that she's dealing in misinformation. She seems somewhat qualified. Her remarks were peer-reviewed. I'm not aware of Premier Mo's remarks being peer-reviewed, but let's talk about the details. She says that they don't test and they don't report. They don't do the work quickly enough so that people like herself who are trying to keep track of the numbers are informed. Can you talk about that, Tony? What is at play here? Because she also, by the way, praises Quebec for getting their numbers in and also getting the numbers right. There's a problem about determining who has died of COVID. I'll let you talk about that.
People will remember early on in the pandemic that the president of the United States at the time, Donald Trump, was pilloried in the press for saying, well, the numbers are so high because we're doing too much testing. You just stop the testing and the numbers will go down. And
pretty smart.
You know, that's one way to deal with it and just ignore the people who are dying. But there's been much less reaction recently when other politicians now are doing basically the same thing. Doug Ford did that just within the past couple of weeks. He said, we're changing the testing so that you can only be tested if you are seriously ill. And automatically, that's cutting out the majority of people who are infected. They now don't get tested. Therefore, the numbers don't get counted. And the numbers are artificially low. And I guess that's what's happening in Saskatchewan and a number of other jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, she says that the Saskatchewan policy has been telling people to do their tests at home. So how would he know anything about the outcome of the test?
Well, that's right. And I've heard that from across the country. People do their tests at home. If they can get hold of them, then they're not easy to get hold of all the time. But then there's nowhere to report. If they get a positive result, there's nowhere that they can report it. They just keep that to themselves, I guess.
Well, by the way, this is a war on scientists. I mean, it is interesting that Ms. Leach would choose to cite somebody who is pretty careless and way off. And by the way, the article by Omar Moslin, the Toronto Star, a scientist premier clash over death data, she's supported across the board, frankly, by her fellow professionals. She is an infectious disease expert. And of course, now she's been put in a position having to defend her research. I gotta say, she does it rather vigorously. She said, I'd be happy to meet with the premier. And then she says, unfortunately, Saskatchewan may still see more than 700 new COVID deaths in the coming months. And that this is directly to Mo. If you and your team would like to prevent those deaths and understand how past deaths have been missed, I would be sincerely happy to do this. Of course, they don't want to meet with her. They don't want to meet empathy. You know, why can't all of our leading politicians speak up? The NDP has a shot. Liberal Party, but why don't they say, Mo, can we have you meet with the epidemiologist? And by the way, you, a politician, are accusing a professional of misinformation when she has a peer-reviewed paper. I just said before, I don't think Mo ever gets peer-reviewed. He can say what he wants. And it was pointed out, by the way, he took the mic by himself. There were no professionals standing anywhere near him when he decided to smear this woman. I mean, we got a serious argument in this country. I may as well read this part, too. I think it's important. Moriarty highlighted how Quebec is the only province that has seen progressively fewer deaths in every sector in each successive wave, which she believes is no coincidence. Quebec reporting of deaths is the fastest in the country and has been so for about 20 years. And it leads the country in post-mortem testing as well. And then she says, in Quebec, you see this close to real-time death reporting. And what it has done is give a more accurate sense of what's happening. So we have this sideshow of grifters and contractors applauding a premier who isn't interested in doing what in Quebec, apparently, she says they do regularly. So we got some things to be solved in this country.
Absolutely correct. And it does go back to the question of which class you are and which class you care about, because we know that from the beginning of this pandemic, the goal of corporations, businesses, was to get people back to work as quickly as possible, no matter the cost, without proper protections, no matter how many people got sick and died. And we saw it particularly in crowded working locations like meatpacking plants and, Amazon warehouses.
That's where the workers' concern is. That's where it is. I mean, and we want to sanitate a report, and that's why we're so appreciative of that article in Passages. Because you start by where are the people and what are their needs and interests, and you in your job, if you're a government, it should be to protect them, not private entrepreneurs and such, but to protect the workers. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm going to thank Phil Condon and Tony Leo, and we'll see you next week.